Orleans, this is Music Inside Out. I'm Gwen Tompkins. As a sideman and band leader, Deacon John takes credit for working on some of the best-remembered songs produced in New Orleans. But a career in music didn't come easy.
My mother wouldn't let us hear that rock and roll. She said, "Oh, no, turn that stuff off. I can't stand that stuff."
He played anyway. Rock and roll, R&B, soul, psychedelic music, big band. Deacon John has been performing for more than half a century, which may be why he always sounds like he's been doing something naughty.
It's only gonna get worse.
Deacon John joins us after the break. When a song comes on the radio, most people listen for themselves. It's a natural desire. Somewhere in the lyrics of a song, in the mood it conjures, or in the heartbeat of the rhythm, is the possibility of finding a whiff of our own experience. Something rings true. But when session musicians listen to the radio, they find their musical fingerprints all over the place. Session musicians are the worker bees of the recording industry, whose creativity and play make a whole lot of music sound terrific. Deacon John can hear his guitar on some of the most iconic songs that New Orleans has ever produced.
Ride your pony. Get on your pony and
be your guide. But I,
when you're alone, the going gets rough. Come back, come back, come back. I've had enough.
Deacon John's name is not on any of these recordings, but he has three CDs of his own and songs we want to talk about. Deacon John has also built a career performing live, including appearances at every New Orleans Jazz and Heritage Festival since 1970. Deacon John has generously invited us to his home in New Orleans. Thanks for having us over.
Always a pleasure to have you over, darling.
I knew it, Deacon John. You really are trouble, aren't you?
It's only going to get worse.
Now, I'm ashamed to admit this, but until this interview, it never occurred to me that you had a last name. I've always thought of you as Deacon John, but now I realize that you are Deacon John Moore of the Moore family of New Orleans.
The musical Moores.
The musical Moores off of Elysian Fields.
Now, Ponte Street, right off of Elysian Fields.
Now, there's a story that your mother cut your fingernails when you were a baby under a fig tree.
Yeah.
What does that mean?
Well, it's an old Creole superstition said that if you cut the child's nail on the fig tree, he will grow up to be a singer.
That's amazing because,
yeah,
I mean,
it happened.
How many mothers at that time wanted their children to become singers?
Well, I don't know, but there was a huge choir where I went to school.
Now, you are the fifth of 13 children. What do you remember in terms of when you were living in the house? I don't know if all the kids were living there at the same time, but, you know, what did your household sound like when you were growing up?
Well, it was a musical household because my mother kept a piano at the house at all times, you know, and she would play the piano, and every day at 6 o'clock, we had to come in and say the rosary because it came on the radio. I grew up, you know, with no TV, no computers. So all we had to do was go outside and play all the time, you know, and I had a really marvelous childhood because I had so many playmates, my own brothers and sisters, and then the neighborhood I grew up in was just fantastic. It was like a very mixed neighborhood. There was a white family across the street, and they had like 7 kids, and my cousins lived next door to me. They had 6 girls, and then there was a Filipino and Creole family on the corner, you know, and everything was fine. We all playing with each other until we went to school, and we had to go to segregated schools and segregated churches, but it was fine, you know, play all the sidewalk games like hopscotch and balls and jacks and marbles and spin the tops, flying kites. And so that's the kind of childhood I had, you know. Besides, you know, my father had a barnyard in the backyard, you know. He kept about 50 chickens running around because we had chicken every Sunday. Saturday night was the big night because daddy could go kill the chickens. Come on, everybody run in the backyard. Daddy killed the chickens.
Now, are you saying that this is the big entertainment of your youth, seeing daddy kill a chicken?
Yeah, of the week, you know. You knew every Saturday night, daddy gonna kill the chickens.
Maybe you all did need a TV set.
We didn't need no, they hadn't invented it yet. It was all radio, you know, and yeah. Then we had movies was something, you know, we went to maybe on Sundays, because my grandfather, my mother's father, he was a musician, and he played banjo, and he would work in a barber shop, you know, so every Sunday he'd catch the bus, he'd leave them the Calio Projects, and he'd catch the bus, come down to see his daughter and visit with us, and he always had a pocket full of loose change. As soon as we saw him get off the bus, everybody make a beeline. Here come Poppy! And meet him at the bus stop, and he'd hug us, and he gave everybody a silver dime. Boy, we thought that was big time. Man, silver dime, man.
So what you're describing is a life that really no longer exists anywhere around the country. Yeah. I mean, a neighborhood full of children, a house full of children, chickens clucking in the background. Take us back to something that you remember hearing in your household, something that you liked hearing, not just that you remember hearing.
Well, my mother wouldn't let us hear that rock and roll. She said, "Oh, no, turn that stuff off. I can't stand that stuff." She said, "Sure, it's Shirley and Lee." She said, "Ooh, that woman sound like a cat on a hot tin roof."
Come on, baby, while the thrill is on. Come on, baby, let's have some fun. Come on, baby, let the good time roll. Roll all night long.
Well, if she didn't like Shirley and Lee, she was in for a lifetime of heartache, I think.
She liked popular music, like a little country and western tune. She taught me how to sing, "Hey, good looking, what you got cooking? I was about cooking something up with me."
Hey, sweet baby, don't you think maybe we could find us a brand new recipe?
I went and bought me a crystal radio and put the headphones so she couldn't hear what I was listening to. You know, I started tuning in WLAC from Nashville, and they played nothing but blues like Hound Dog and Big Mama Thornton, and they played Muddy Waters, Howlin' Wolf. Boy, and I heard that stuff, I said, man. But the one song that influenced me to become a guitar player was Honky Tonk by Bill Doggett. That was a song that was, you know, if you call yourself a guitar player, you had to know how to play honky tonk. So I would just practice that over and over all the time till I memorized the whole guitar solo. And it was really challenging, you know, as a guitar player. And it meant that, you know, you had to really have your chops together to play. Can't play it.
No, that was pretty fantastic. But then you sang in the church, didn't you?
Oh yeah.
Well, yeah, I mean, weren't you something of a star in the
Well, my mother put me in the choir against my will.
As many choir experiences begin.
Because I was real shy.
Were you?
Yeah, oh yeah. Because my mother used to invite her friends over, and she would make me sing. And of course, she'd give me that look, you better sing. So I sang, and one of the ladies gave me a silver dime. I said, ooh, then he couldn't shut me up.
You are a sucker for a silver dime.
Oh, yeah.
But explain to me the name Deacon John. There are two stories that I know of. One is
I'm going to tell you the true story.
Yeah, let's hear the true story.
All right, you tell me what you said.
Okay, I've heard two stories. One is that you sang so rambunctiously, you know what I mean, in the Ray Charles tradition and the gospel tradition, that people began to think of you as a shouting, sort of a shouting minister, somebody who sang like a deacon in a church. And then there's another story that you just look like a deacon.
Well, both of those stories are true. But I can tell you how the name came, you know. When we organized Deacon John and the Ivories, well, you know, we had a meeting, and the drummer, he used to play with Professor Longhair. And everybody's coming up with all these names, you know, because I had red hair, and they would call me Lil Red or something. And say, no, and then Al Miller, you know, he heard that song, you know, Roy Brown did Good Rockin' Tonight. And there's a line in the song say, Deacon Jones and Elder Brown, two of the slickest cats in town. And he said, let's call him Deacon Jones. And everybody fell out. Yeah, let's call him Deacon Jones.
Now Deacon Jones and Elder Brown, two of the smartest boys in town. They'll be here, just wait and see. Jumping in a pegging as a jamboree. Oh, hey, man, yeah, it's good rocking tonight.
Man, I started crying. I said, man, please don't call me Deacon Jones. I said, man, we won't be able to get our records played on the radio. So how are we going to get jobs playing for all these clubs? And people are going to think we're playing gospel music with a name like that. They just kept on laughing. They said, man, come on. He said, that's something unique, you know. That's a real good name for you. And I said, no, man, please. But so,
no, that is a good name for you. That really is, Deacon
once
John.
Once they tag you with a name, you can't get rid of it.
Exactly.
No matter what you do, they're still going to call you by that name.
Magic of your love thrills me through and through. Angel serenade me when I'm with you.
We're talking to the reluctant deacon of New Orleans rock and roll and early R&B. The song playing is Deacon John's first record, called When I'm With You. It was composed by Al Reed and arranged by the late, great Wardell Kazare. Deacon John will tell us how he grew into his name after the break. I'm Gwen Tompkins, and this is Music Inside Out. We're talking with Deacon John about the many songs that have influenced his work as a guitarist, bandleader, and teacher. His 2003 CD, called Deacon John's Jump Blues, featured rock and roll, R&B, and this song, Going Back to New Orleans. No, make that New Orleans.
Back home, T9A to the land of the beautiful queens. I'm going back home to my baby. I'm going back to New Orleans. Gonna see Nene, my pa Ray, Cousin, and my ma and pa. Gonna plant my feet on Rampart Street and be there for the Mardi Gras. I've been to Cuba, South America way. I've been to Euro, Mexico is okay. Over in France, the chicks are really fine. I get my kicks below the Mason-Dixon line. Going back home, T98, nevermore will I roam. Gonna get my fill of gumbo filet, cause New Orleans is my home. To the land of the beautiful queens. I'm going back home to my baby. I'm going back to New Orleans. Gonna get me crawfish, jambalaya, red beans, and some fine praline. Gonna get some loving that will satisfy back home in New Orleans.
Nay, that was Deacon John in concert in 2003. That show also featured Dr. John, Henry Butler, Devel Crawford, and Alan Toussaint. It was an unforgettable night for Deacon John and for the many who were there. A documentary of the event aired on PBS.
I closed the show out with an old Negro spiritual that I sing at a lot of funerals. And it was originally done by Sam Cooke. It's called Any Day Now.
That's a beautiful song.
Yeah, I sing it at a lot of funerals. Incidentally, you know, I finally figured out why I got the name Deacon John. It's a God-given name because I comfort people in times of sorrow and I bring joy to them in their celebrations of life.
That's exactly what you do.
Exactly, you know, I figured, I said, that's why God gave me this name. Ain't no sense trying to change it now. And, you know, to bear further credence to that name, most of my engagements now are playing weddings. And what a perfect name for a band to play weddings. Deacon John's playing at my wedding. Well, say, hey, I can marry you too. And I got a real another interesting story about that.
Now, wait. Now, but you got to get to Any Day Now first.
One of these mornings, I'm going away. I'm going to heaven to stay. I don't know how soon. Maybe morning, night and noon. To see the Father and by His side I'll stand. There'll be no more sorrows, no sadness, just only complete death. But any day
am I go. Hallelujah. And it's praises to name. But oh, oh, any day I know. Am I going home?
I pray that I die before you do.
Just so that you can sing that at my funeral.
I've got many others I do, too.
But the thing is, you know, listening right now, the people listening to this show, they're going to be thinking that Deacon John is just a gospel, not just, but is a gospel musician. But you are so much more than that. I mean, you let's talk about the Ivories. This was, I mean, your group, you were a founding member of this group. You know, at any point in its history, so many people came through it. You know, Zigaboo Modalist. Didn't James Booker come through it as well?
He played with me. Let me see. Art Neville, Cyril Neville, Aaron Neville, Charles Neville, James Rivers, Sam Alcorn, Sammy Perfect, James Black, Smokey Johnson. I had so many people played in my band. Bob French, George French.
So what did you people sound like on a good night? Hell, what did you sound like on a bad night?
Well, basically, we were an R&B band back then. You know, we played rhythm and blues and the popular songs of the day, you know, and the band kept changing over the years. You know, at one point, you know, I started playing rock as opposed to rhythm and blues, and then I kept changing. You know, that's what people never know what I'm going to do. You know, of course, I jumped on the bandwagon when the British invasion came too, you know, and I did a lot of Beatles, Rolling Stones. And
my understanding is that you went to the Beatles concert here in New Orleans.
Yeah, I did go to the Beatles concert.
How was it?
Me and my pregnant wife. And we were like a fly in a bowl of milk. But I love the Beatles because I loved they had a really fresh approach to playing music, you know, rhythm and blues mixed with pop, and they recognized the roots music from Chuck Berry, Little Richard, Fats Domino, and they incorporated that. But they took it one step further because most of the rhythm and blues were based around 12-bar blues and just a few chord changes, three-chord city. But the Beatles revolutionized that because they started playing really intricate and chord changes that moved and the melodies were more intricate, you know.
But, you know, I don't think there's many people out there who aren't fans of the Beatles, but for all of their qualities, I never really thought about them as great musicians. Show me something that they did in terms of, you know, when you say they revolutionized rhythm and blues.
Their first big record, you know, like, I Want to Hold Your Hand.
Okay.
You know? Well, in a regular song, you would get like a... But they put all these different chord changes and melodies, and it came up. That was unheard of back in that. Oh, yeah, I tell you something. I think you'll understand.
When I say that something, I want to hold your hand. Man, and please
say to me, you let me hold your hand, I let me hold your hand. I wanna hold your hand, I wanna hold your hand.
Those kind of chord patterns, you know, the... Well, like foreign to rhythm and blues. You
Wait,
know.
Explain what the original chord would have sounded like just in a regular song.
Like, that's straight out of Africa. Bo Diddley bought it with a diamond ring. If that diamond ring don't shine. Hey, Bo Diddley. That came from Chuck Berry. Chuck Berry started out as a blues musician. Then he wrote a song about a cow called Maybelline. And he took the country rhythms and mixed it up with blues. And he got,
Maybelline, why can't you be true? Oh, Maybelline, why can't you be true? You done started back doing the things you used to do.
And he's got that country beat.
So how did something like that turn into what the Beatles did?
Well, what the Beatles did was they incorporated some of these same rhythms and changed the chord patterns and did a little melody that was a little bit more intricate, and they did the harmonies and stuff like that.
And you break it up, actually, in time as well, right? You break up the chord that used to go like the Maybelline to something that is less driving, not like to something that is like broken up. I'm no musician. I'm just doing the best I can. But I mean, there's something about your understanding. I mean, you really understand what you're talking about when it comes to the progression of music over the years, and maybe because you have performed so many covers, you have looked, I mean, you look at musicians and you understand them, I think, in a way that most, obviously most non-musicians can't understand, but I mean, that in a way that's even more detailed than most musicians, I think.
Yeah, you know, there are certain rhythms, you know, that are guttural, you know, they hit you in the gut, and you have to dance when you hear it, like this beat. If you hear like, left a good job in the city, working for the man every night and day, you know, because I observe people on the dance floor and there's certain rhythms that they respond to.
That's the danger. Like that. Now you take Sally and I'll take Sue, and we're gonna rock away all our blues. Come on,
come on, let me show you where it's at.
Come on,
come on, let me show you where it's
come
at.
On.
Come on, let me show you where it's at.
The name of the place is
I like it like that.
Come on.
Let's talk about your session work, because part of the work that you did, you know, I mean, and laying down, helping to lay down these amazing, iconic New Orleans songs, has to do with understanding particular artists, what they're good at, and how to showcase them at their best.
Well, my part as a guitar player was just kind of relegated to, you know, to playing most of the time what was written on the music, because a lot of that stuff was written out note for note.
Yeah, but some, you know, I remember Dr. John talks a lot about his session work, and he says that sometimes you like to put in a little
of wasn't, because there were some producers who wanted, you know, to, hey, man, just do what you do, you know, and you fill in the holes, you know, rather than playing what's strictly written on the paper, say, go on and play some of what you think is going to happen, you know, and that's what happened on, like, Ain't My Fault, Barefoot, and, you know, the producer said, hey, you do it, you know.
That's a great
and
song.
We did it.
Everybody get on your feet. You make me nervous when you're in your seat. Take off your shoes and pat your feet. We doing a dance that can't be beat. We barefootin'. We barefootin'. We barefootin'. We barefootin'. Went to a party the other night. Long tall Sally was out of sight. Threw away a wig and her house sneakers too. She was doing a dance without any shoes. She was barefootin'. She was barefootin'. She was barefootin'. She was barefootin'. Hey, little girl with your red dress on, I bet you can barefoot all night long. Take off your shoes and throw them away. Come back and get them another day. We barefootin'. We barefootin'. We barefootin'. We barefootin'. Everybody get barefooted. Take off your shoes. Henry, he said to Sue, if I barefoot, would you barefoot too? Sue told John, I studied stew. I was barefooting ever since I was two. It was barefooting. It was barefooting. It was barefooting. We barefooting. We barefooting.
Don't Have No Shoes On. That's Robert Parker and Barefootin', with Deacon John finger-licking his guitar all over the place. Wiggle your toes if you want to stay with us after the break. This is Music Inside Out. I'm Gwen Tompkins. We're talking with Deacon John about his various aliases and recordings. Remember, Haven't I Been Good to You? Deacon John again on lead vocals with You Don't Know How to Turn Me On. But as good as those songs were, Deacon John's biggest hits don't mention him by name. He was a session guitarist for some of the city's top producers, including the composer, pianist, and arranger, Alan Toussaint. We asked Deacon John about putting his own stamp on other people's songs.
What Alan was doing with his work, it was all built around the piano. And most of the stuff, you know, the guitar players took a back seat during the 60s, you know, when all that kind of rhythm and blues happened, because we had to accent the drum beats and the rhythm parts, you know, because most of the time we were just playing. Same thing the drummer playing.
What song is that?
All these things like mother-in-law. Yeah.
The worst person I know.
Mother-in-law.
Mother-in-law.
Oh, she worries me so.
Mother-in-law.
Mother-in-law.
If she leave us alone, oh, we would have a happy home. Down below.
Mother-in-law.
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 They didn't leave much room for improvisation because Alan's whole thing was based around the piano.
Right.
And he get in the studio, he say, turn them guitars down, turn the piano up. More piano cars. He had that style of piano playing that was selling the records, you know.
Right. Well, and, you know, Dr. John mentions that when he worked with Alan Toussaint, he this was a phrase he often heard. Gentlemen, that was wonderful. Now take 62.
He later changed. You know, he changed with the time tunes because at one point, you know, the guitars took over. And the pianos was in the back seat now. So what Alan did, he would hire 3 guitar players. And he would play, his piano playing was very sparse. Like when Lee Dorsey came along with the Coal Mines and Ride Your Pony, well, you didn't hear much piano.
That's right.
But the guitar stuck out. And that's when, you know, he came up with all the little guitar parts.
Tell me, what is it like when you turn on the radio and you hear one of these songs that you played on? Do you hear yourself ever?
Yeah. Oh, yeah, I hear myself all the time. I hear Tell It Like It Is because I was the one who came up with that lick on the beginning.
If you want something to play with, go and find yourself a toy.
Some of the producers, you know, they would let you do, yeah, you know what to do. You done played all these hit records, you know. So they just give you some kind of idea, framework to go by and let you do the rest. And others like Toussaint, they were more strict about what you played.
And so,
but even Alan got loose too because, you know, when he started using the meters on his sessions, a lot of that stuff, you know, was just spontaneous head arrangements.
But in terms of listening, when you turn on, let's say you turn on OZ or you turn on TIX or you turn on WWNO and you hear one of your songs or one of the songs where your fingerprint is there. Mm-hmm. I mean, talk about what goes through your mind. Is it pride? Is it melancholy? Is it, do you think, dang, I wish I had those royalties? What comes to mind?
Well, the first thing comes to mind is just a tremendous sense of pride, you know, that, hey, I was the one who was chosen out of all these people to play on those records. When I see Alan Toussaint now, I can't thank him enough because I say, what you've done? I say, you made me a part of the musical legacy and history of New Orleans, because what you did epitomized, you know, what New Orleans music meant in those days. And the fact that you chose me to be a part of this is something I can't thank you enough for. And I'll forever be grateful to you for making me a part of the indigenous culture.
Should I go away? Do you want me to leave? or should I stay? She said you'll be fighting, fighting and losing that girl. But you'll have so much fun, yes you will, trying to win.
Well, you know, your dad was a bricklayer, among other pursuits. And the one thing about masonry and any kind of work like that is that you can drive around your world to a large degree and you can see where you contributed to almost every building. And in a way, as a session musician, you have had the exact same experience. Your imprint is on all of these different and varied pieces of music. Some not hits, some, many of them, most of them hits.
Yeah, you know, you can sense a pride and satisfaction that you were a part of history. But at the same time, you know, an artisan, somebody who does a work of art, it's just like one painting, you know. But in the recording industry, they can make copies and copies and keep selling those copies over and over and over. And when a bricklayer, you know, he makes a building or something, it's just there. You know, they don't make copies of that building and sell it over and over, you know, like they can, you know, with the distinction here is material things and works of art that are products of intellectual labor.
Now, the closest I think that you've gotten to a day job, other than the butter and egg work of being a session musician, is that you have taught blues music in the Louisiana schools. But isn't there a part of the blues that cannot be taught?
Yeah, I guess so.
Talk to me about
because,
that.
Because what you have to understand is blues music is like, blues is a legitimate parent of all jazz. And these are the only, I would say, three American forms of music, that's blues, jazz, and gospel. And the blues and gospel live right next door to each other. You know? A preacher once said that, you know, the people who gave up hope in gospel music, they started playing the blues.
So tell me, what can be taught, what can't be taught about
the
blues?
It's hard to teach, you know, things like blues and jazz because they're highly improvisational and it's nothing really structured, you know. Exactly. It's like I can give... But being the nature of improvisation, but that's to say the same thing about jazz, you know. It's just so much you can show you, you know. Now you're on your own now, you know, because if you feel like crying, you feel like laughing, or you feel like shouting, you know, it comes out, you know, on your instrument. If you're singing, it comes out vocally. And, you know, it's improvisational. So every time you do it, it won't be the same. Like if you listen to John Coltrane play Naima, every time he played, he's not going to play it exactly like he did it the first time, you know.
But with blues music, it almost doesn't matter who wrote the song. It's coming out of you.
With the artist.
Right, and you have to tattoo it.
Yeah.
With your own...
You put your own signature
feel.
On it, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Your stank.
Mm-hmm.
As the scientists would say.
Yeah, yeah. I can show you how to do some of this stuff, but...
I'll give you an example. Yeah. Okay, now, this is another thing I think about blues. Blues, more than any other music form, talks about the entire arc of a relationship or of human experience. So, for instance, like on one, in your own recording career, you have recorded a song called Happy Home, You Don't Know How to Turn Me On... Haven't I been good to you? And that's all right.
I know you love some other man, but that's all right.
Love that song. I love that song. And no matter who sings it, I love it. Muddy Waters or, you know, you obviously, or Buddy Guy, Junior Wells, Levon Helm. Everybody has like a totally different rendition of that song.
Well, it tells a story, you know, and it's a story that a lot of people can relate to. And it gives you the blues.
So show us.
You told me, baby, once upon a time,
little girl, you be mine, but that's all right. I know you love some other man, but that's all right. But every night, then I wonder, who's loving you tonight? You told me, baby, your love for me was strong. But when I woke up this morning, your big words was gone, but that's all right. I know you love some other man, but that's all right. But every now and then I wonder, who's loving you tonight? Just couldn't understand. Now you gone and left me for some other man, but that's all right. I know you love some other man, but that's all right. But every now and then I wonder, who's loving you tonight?
Deacon John, thank you very much for having us.
Oh, thank you for having me.
Bandleader, teacher, session musician, and scamp, Deacon John spoke with us from his home in New Orleans.
I heard Mama tell Papa, you better let that boy boogie woogie, 'cause it's in him and it got to come out. I said, yes, people, I was really having a ball. Lord, yeah, we're gonna keep on boogieing. Hey, Lynette, this wasn't on the list.
Been listening to Music Inside Out. Our show is produced by Lynette Johnson, Thomas Walsh, Jason Ryan, and Bridget McCarthy. Our theme song was composed and performed by James Booker. Music Inside Out is produced in partnership with WWNO. Don't forget to follow us on Facebook and Twitter. To hear this show or any other episode, please go to our website at musicinsideout.org. And if you'd like to sponsor our show, let's talk underwriting. Email Gwen at musicinsideout.org. I'm Gwen Tompkins, and this is Music Inside Out.
Major support for Music Inside Out comes from the Historic New Orleans Collection. Music Inside Out also receives support from the New Orleans Jazz and Heritage Foundation, Surf Song Realty of Orange Beach, Alabama, Adam Newman Designs, and WWNO.
This week, the last word goes to our guest, Deacon John. Here he is with Many Rivers to Cross. Enjoy.
Many rivers to cross, but I can't seem to find my way over. Wondering I've been lost as I travel along the white cliffs of Dover. And this loneliness won't leave me alone. Yeah, yeah, baby, it's such a drag to be on your own. My spirit's lonely and I don't know why. Well, I guess I have to cry. Many rivers to cross, travel along the white cliffs of Dover. Yeah, 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 yeah. Yeah, 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 yeah. Everybody say yeah. I wanna know, don't it make you feel alright?